This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Could Ukraine end up being the Russia of 2020? There appears to be little doubt that during a July phone call with the president of Ukraine, President Trump discussed 2020 Democratic contender Joe Biden and his son, Hunter. Reports suggest the president asked Ukraine's new leader to reopen an investigation into Hunter Biden's business. The president says there was absolutely nothing wrong in what he described as a perfect call. Others take a different view. President Trump is now on the record saying he referenced corruption coming up in the conversation and named Joe Biden and his son as people who might, in his view, contribute to corruption in the Ukraine. Lots to unpack with this story. And so joining us in studio is NPR's Ron Elving. Ron, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Joshua.
With, of course, the caveat that this could all change by the time you and I are done talking. But we are going to talk about this for just a minute. And really, we're going to peel a sliver of this off. The story's still moving, but we welcome your questions and thoughts. So email us, 1A@WAMU.org. Comment on our Facebook page or tweet us at 1A. And, of course, your NPR member station is the best place to go for the latest on this. Or you can go online to NPR.org. Ron, why Ukraine? How did they even factor into all of this?
Ukraine has been an object of some fascination for Donald Trump for a number of years. And some of this has to do, of course, with its rivalry, if you will, with the Moscow government of Vladimir Putin. Putin, once he got under a certain amount of pressure a few years ago, saw fit to do something quite popular with Russians, which was seize Crimea, which is part of Ukraine. It is territorially part of Ukraine. Many ethnic Russians live there. Putin saw his way clear to essentially take it over. And the world community disapproved. Russia was expelled from the G8, which has hence been 6G7. Donald Trump thinks that maybe it should be G8 again and has encouraged the other seven to say, hey, let's take them back. After all, Putin just outsmarted Barack Obama when he got away with Crimea. That's not the viewpoint of the European allies, who worry a lot more about Russia perhaps than Donald Trump does. So some of the context of Ukraine, also some of the people who have worked for Donald Trump over the years have had business dealings in Ukraine. That has been a volatile situation both economically and politically in Kyiv for a number of years now since Ukraine broke away from the old Soviet Union a generation ago.
Ukraine also has a relatively new president, Volodymyr Zelensky, right?
Interesting, colorful figure, has been, among other things, a comedian in his career. And he was very new in office when this July 25th phone call took place. And his biggest concern was getting his hands on the $250 million in military aid that had already been approved by the House and the Senate and American military leaders and was on its way to help President Zelensky shore up the border with Russia. And they do still have a lot of territory the Russians haven't taken, but they are infiltrating eastern Ukraine. They have a lot of partisans there. And that is a hot and cold war that's been going on for several years now. It is existential for the people in Kyiv, and they need that aid, and the United States has been helping them. But this aid got held up even after it was approved at the Pentagon, approved by the House and Senate. Republicans were all for it in the Senate, and then it got held up. And the word was, well, we're reviewing some policy and we want to make sure Ukraine is aligned with us in terms of our policy. And weeks went by and weeks went by. During that period of time, the president got on the phone, that is President Trump, got on the phone to President Zelensky and started talking to him apparently repeatedly about Joe Biden and Hunter Biden. And you've got to investigate them. And yeah, I know there was an investigation and that got closed and nothing came of it, but you need to reopen that. You need another prosecutor. You need to go after Joe Biden. And that's pretty shocking from the standpoint of the appearance, at least, that with this military aid hanging in the balance, with Ukraine's military security hanging in the balance, President Trump wanted to talk about Joe Biden, a potential rival in the next presidential election.
So you got Ukraine's proximity to Russia, there's that kind of more local concern. Ukraine's importance militarily, not just between Ukraine and Russia, but to NATO particularly. NATO's paying really heavy attention to Ukraine and has for a while. What's this deal with Joe and Hunter Biden? Is there anything to concerns about, like, Hunter Biden's business? Like, what business was he in?
Hunter Biden did have some business interests in Ukraine. He sat on the board of a natural gas company there. He had various dealings, much of which has not been entirely brought to light, but it has been investigated both by the Ukrainians and by American news organizations and others. And the president insists there's something there that's being covered up. But the news organizations can't find it to cover it up in the first place. And we don't know just what authorities where have ever come up with anything other than, say, question marks about exactly what Hunter Biden might have been doing there, or for that matter, what Joe Biden's interest in it might have been, or for that matter, how that information might have come to Donald Trump. And there's another character to loop into all this, and that's Paul Manafort, who had a lot of business dealings in Kiev, who worked for some politicians there who were friendly to Moscow. And that wound up being part of the indictment that sent him to jail.
Now, this feels like one of those things where we have to be very discerning about the difference between smoke and fire. Like, there's all these different moving parts of Vladimir Putin, Paul Manafort, Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, that can begin to feel like a fire has kindled. But the issue, I think, Ron, is that we just don't know, because we don't have all the connections between all the dots.
A lot of this could get a lot clearer fast if the president would simply release the transcript, which he has said he might, but hasn't done, release the transcript of his conversation with President Zelensky. Just what was he asking him to do? What was he talking to him about besides what he was asking him to do? Was there any mention made of the $250 million in military aid? Again, an existential matter for Kiev, for Zelensky. And what exactly was the president saying he wanted done? And was there any quid pro quo? We don't have evidence of a quid pro quo. We don't know that the president took this out of the background and put it in the foreground. It was certainly in the background.
Part of the issue, Ron, is that we even know about this phone call in the first place, and that goes to this whistleblower complaint. Can you just kind of clarify what this complaint was? You know, Adam Schiff, who's the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, has been pounding the table, his fist on the table, saying, no, really, you owe us this report. What is this report?
There is a law on the books. It goes back a number of years, and it is called the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act. And if someone in the intelligence community comes upon evidence of wrongdoing, they are supposed to report it, any kind of wrongdoing by anyone. And in the past several weeks, someone who was able to either listen in or read the transcript of this call between Trump and Zelensky has taken that matter into his own hands, if you will, and taken it to the inspector general, which is what he is supposed to do. We don't know if it's a he or a she. This person is supposed to take it to the inspector general for the intelligence community. That is a person named Michael Atkinson, and he is supposed to take it on to the director of national intelligence. We have a brand new director of national intelligence because Senator Dan Coats retired. And so Joseph McGuire now has that job. Well, Mr. McGuire got this report from the IG. And by the way, the IG considered it both serious and urgent. He took it up the food chain, just like he's supposed to do. And when he got to the director of national intelligence, that person consulted Attorney General William Barr and the White House. And they told him, you're not giving that to anybody.
Is that legal?
According to the law, the director of national intelligence, if given this report by the inspector general, must share it with Congress. And that is specifically what the president's administration, the president and his attorney general, are saying they won't do.
And we should be clear, when we say share it with Congress, we're not talking about on the House floor. We mean with, like, the House Intelligence Committee behind closed doors, and then they can deliberate what to do with it from there, right?
There is a specified group of people, including the leaders of both parties in the House and Senate, and the leaders, and that's in both parties, the leaders of the intelligence committees from both the House and Senate. They're supposed to be able to see it according to the law.
So this kind of gang of eight would be able to go off, see the document, and then talk in a bipartisan way and say, okay, what do we do next?
That's right. It would not necessarily be on C-SPAN or on any other news media for any particular period of time. We don't know what would happen to it after that, but they are obligated by law to share it with that gang of eight, as you call them.
On what legal basis are the Attorney General and the President arguing that this report does not need to be released? Or have they made a legal argument?
They've said they might release it. So it is not an outright refusal, but what they did was they advised the man who is supposed to deliver it to Congress not to do so. And now we are being told maybe they will. But consider how often that sort of language has been used in the past. Well, maybe we'll do that. Well, maybe we'll do that. Well, maybe we'll comply with the law. But maybe you guys should go to court and make us. And that's where we are with respect to so many other witnesses, so many other documents that Congress has called for under the color of its authority as the administrating branch over the entire government, because they all have to get their money from Congress.
I've held off on asking this question last because it's been in the news cycle completely, and I wanted to make sure we got all the backstory before we went to this. Don tweeted, "Democrats need to take action. These worthless meetings are being stonewalled by the administration, and Congress must do their constitutional duty and hold the president accountable. Impeachment." The law says that the president is responsible for seeing that the laws are faithfully executed. Is this grounds for impeachment?
This is going to be the question before the nation for the next several days and weeks, one suspects, if not months. This opens a whole new line of attack for impeachment. It is different in detail, certainly, from the Mueller report, which outlined 10 potential areas of obstruction of justice, each of which could be considered an impeachable offense.
Although Robert Mueller was clear that his office wasn't even allowed to contemplate obstruction of justice.
It was not allowed to contemplate indictment. For obstruction of justice. And on Friday, on NPR, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, said, you know, maybe we should change the law that says he can't be indicted, and then we could indict a president if he's clearly guilty of some sort of wrongdoing in office, and we wouldn't have to first go through the extraordinary upheaval and turmoil of an impeachment process, which has a tendency to eat the entire agenda and become the only issue before the country and take months and months and months, if not years. And so that obviously is not undertaken often or lightly. Perhaps there should be something other than a nuclear weapon in this particular arsenal.
NPR senior editor and correspondent Ron Elving. Ron, thanks for breaking this all down. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Coming up, a graphic novelist on his book, nearly 20 years in the making, who Dave Eggers called the most versatile and innovative artist the medium has known. Chris Ware joins us just ahead. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.